Hare Krishna. So we continue our discussion on the first text of the Shikshashtakam. So in the previous session, so the second session, we discussed about this theme of the mind that is acts at various levels. It acts as a window where it provides us a channel for getting information from the world and functioning in this world. Then it also acts as a TV screen by which it takes our consciousness away from where we are. It makes us absent-minded, and also that's how the soul gets trapped in matter from the spiritual level to the material level. And then we discussed about how this mind can also act as a mirror, because it not only shapes our perception of the outer world, it also shapes our perception of ourselves. And when the mirror of the mind is cleaned, that is what chanting does. And we concluded that point. Before that, we also discussed about how the mind focuses our vision on short-term things, whereas the intelligence looks at long-term. So now, Cheto Darpana we discussed. Now we'll focus on Marjanam. Marjanam is to clean. Yes? Okay, just let me complete a few points. And then we'll discuss. So, Marjanam is cleaning. Now we have Mandira Marjan, we have Undicha Marjan, where we talk about cleaning. Now, usually, when we talk about cleaning, we talk about it in terms of physical terms. There is some dark spot on the floor, or there is some spot on the clothes. So we think of it as a physical act. The mind is itself not a physical thing. So because it is not a physical thing, so cleaning it is also not a physical activity. The mind is subtle, the impurities, the uncleanliness in it is also subtle. And therefore, the cleaning process for that is also subtle. Now the result, before we talk about it further about how to clean the mind, the result of when the mind is clean is that it becomes serene. Serene is very peaceful, very calm. And Krishna talks about this in 6.27. He says, Prashanta manasam yenam yoginam sukhamuttamam upaiti shanta rajasam brahma bhutama kalmasham. So the verse itself is actually very peaceful sounding. Prashanta manasam yenam. That person's mind becomes prashanta, very peaceful. Yoginam sukham uttamam. At that time, the yogi experiences uttama sukha, the transcendental happiness. How did this happen? Upaiti shanta rajasam. The rajas, the rajoguna, the mode of passion such a person has gone. Upaiti shanta. So when the passion is gone, brahma bhutam akalmasham. Brahma Bhuta, that yogi has understood one's spiritual identity. Akalmasham. Kalmasha is impurity. Akalmasha is there is no more impurities. So Krishna says this mind which is clean, which has no impurity, that becomes peaceful or serene. Now we talk about say clean water or pure water or clean water. Now what it means is that water has some additional things to it which are unclean. And then we have some water purifier which removes that. So like that, our consciousness is originally pure. The soul is a part of God. And being as God is all pure, so the soul is also pure. But when the soul gets connected with, just as water, when it mixes with impure things, then it becomes impure. So like that, the soul, when it comes in contact with various material stimuli, it gets affected. Now, when we chant the holy names, the holy name is the way by which the soul comes in contact with Krishna. And that contact with Krishna purifies. So the natural desire of the soul is to serve Krishna. And by the contact with material sense objects, the soul gets many desires other than the desire to serve Krishna. And these desires are impurities. Now when we talk about serving Krishna, there itself is a lot of variety. Different devotees can serve Krishna in different ways. That happens in the spiritual world where there are different rasas in which different devotees serve. And in the material world also we can serve according to our inspiration. So there is variety within the principle of service also. But when we have a desire other than the desire to serve Krishna, that is impurity. And that impurity is what causes misery. So when we chant the holy names, the contact with Krishna removes other desires. And when the desires other than the desire to serve Krishna are removed, then that is the cleansing of the mind. So we have Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song where he says, Krishna Das, Ei Vishwas, Korle Tvara Dukkha Nahi. He says, if we can just have this faith that I am a servant of Krishna, then Ara Dukkha Nahi, then there will be no more misery. So I'll discuss in the next part about this, what it means to say no more misery. But the point is that this chanting of the holy names helps us gain realization that I am a servant of Krishna. So this works both ways. In one sense, we chant in a mood of service. The Prabhupada said, we chant in the mood that please engage me in your service, Krishna. That is one thing. But chanting itself infuses the mood of service within us. Now, once I was to give a class about chanting, and then one devotee asked that, you know, actually, I'm afraid to chant. So why? So then you say, you're praying to Krishna, Krishna, please engage me in your service. But I already have too much service. So if Krishna gives me more service, I'll be in big trouble. So I'm afraid whether I should chant or not. So actually when you say, Krishna, please engage me in your service, it is not so much that we are asking Krishna for more service. We are more of asking Krishna for service attitude. Because even Krishna knows that we have only 24 hours in the day. So nobody expects us to be at two places at the same time and do two things. That human limitation is there for all of us. But actually what we need is the service attitude. So if we have the service attitude, then we become connected with Krishna. So the prayer is more for service attitude. And because chanting connects us with Krishna, so it also grants us that service attitude. Just when we chant more and more, we feel, yes, I want to serve Krishna. So in that sense, it purifies us. Cheto darpana marjanam. So when there are other desires, sensual desires, just or any kind of desire, then they become very strong. If we just keep chanting, then gradually we'll find those other desires subside and our consciousness becomes clear. So the other desires are beaten back by, just like if say, enemy soldiers are attacking. And when they're attacking, then if there's continuous defensive fire, then the enemy soldiers are charging forwards, but when there is continuous fire going on, they're held back by that. They may still keep coming, but when the defensive fire goes on, there will be casualties or they'll fall and then eventually they will stop. So like that, when selfish desire starts coming into our consciousness, the chanting of the holy names is like the defensive fire. You just keep chanting. You may not feel like chanting, but if you keep chanting, then gradually the desires go down. They go down and then they subside. That is in a practical way also, when the worldly desires start becoming too much, if we chant, we will find this Cheto Darpana Marjanam happening. We will find the worldly desires getting beaten back. And then the next part is, when we do this Cheto Darpana Marjanam, the second part is said, Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. So Agni is fire. Davagni is a forest fire. And Mahadavagni is a great forest fire. So forest fire is already itself big. But Mahadavagni is a very great forest fire. And the point of talking about the forest fire is that it is something which cannot be so easily extinguished by human efforts. Sometimes in the forest when wildfires break out, sometimes they're just so big that even with the best fire brigades and the best technology, still they just sometimes burn for days and weeks. So there, the forest fire is much bigger than what is the human power to extinguish. And what is required at that time are rains. When the rains come, then the fires get extinguished. Otherwise, they just burn huge swaths of forest. And then only when all the fire is burned, then they get extinguished. So Mahadavagni means it's such a great fire that it cannot be extinguished by human effort. In our life, we all face different kinds of problems. And we do put in efforts to try to solve the problems. And we can solve specific problems. I fall sick, I take a medicine, I get better. You know, I lose a job, then I find another job. At a material level, we can and should work to solve whatever problems we have. But we cannot solve the problematic material existence itself. You know, one problem will go, another problem will come, and third problem will come, fourth problem will come. This problematic nature of material existence, that can be rectified only by Krishna's mercy. So, bhava maha dava agni nirvapanam. Bhava is material existence, which is filled with the various problems that gets extinguished, that forest fire gets extinguished by the chanting of the holy names. So, this is actually talking about the stage of becoming liberated from material existence. So, in a sense, if you consider these fruits of chanting, in the first two, the material existence itself is ended. Cheto dharpanamaja, the impure desires go away, and there are consciousness rises above the material level. Bhava maha dava agni nirvapanam. So this happens ultimately when we become liberated from material existence. And while we are in material existence also, we can experience relief from misery to the extent we are absorbed in Krishna. Madashraya katha mrishta shunvanti kathayanti cha. Tapanti vidhastapa naitan madgata chetasa. Kapila Dev in the third canto, while instructing Mother Devahuti, says that my devotees, when they absorb themselves in me, tapanti vividhastapa. There are various miseries which are there, but the devotees don't experience it naitan madgata chetasa because their consciousness is absorbed in me. So they don't experience the miseries. Just like say it's very hot outside and then we are feeling uncomfortable. But we come inside an air-conditioned room. Now, as soon as we come inside the air-conditioned room, we feel relief. The heat is there outside, but inside the air-conditioned room, there is relief. So like that, in the material world, there is going to be misery. But as soon as we absorb ourselves in remembrance of Krishna, that is like coming inside, that is like bringing our consciousness in an air-conditioned room. So that connection with Krishna, that remembrance of Krishna, that gives us relief. So the relief ultimately comes at the end of material existence. But even while in material existence, we experience some relief. Bhava maha dava agni nirvapanam. So in this, through these two stages, when our material desires are cleansed away by the chanting, and when our consciousness is raised above the material level by absorption in Krishna, then the material existence ends. What does it mean to raise our consciousness above the material level? As long as we are in the material world, the material problems will be there and they will affect us. But the magnitude of the effect varies depending on our consciousness. Say like now, just a hurricane happened yesterday. Some effects are there today also. So now if we are on the road where the stormy winds are going along, or whether there is some flooding happening, then we are right in the middle of the trouble and we'll be very worried. But if a rescue helicopter has come and the helicopter has raised us above, then we are still concerned, okay, what is the damage? Are any of my friends, relatives, any acquaintances are in trouble? We'll be concerned, but we'll not feel so personally threatened because we have been lifted above. So like that, as long as we are in the material world, if there are problems at the material level, they will affect us. But if our consciousness is also at the material level, we will feel very threatened by the problem. It's like I am on the ground and there is flooding on the ground. But if we chant and we raise our consciousness to a spiritual level, we remember, I am a soul, I am a servant of Krishna. Whatever happens, I will be serving Krishna. And that brings security. That raises our consciousness. And then although the problem is there, we don't feel so burdened by the problem. We don't feel so threatened by the problem. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Krishna Das, ei Vishwas, Korle Tvara Dukkhanai. So if we are convinced that I have to serve Krishna, then whatever situation I am put in, I'll serve Krishna in some way or the other. But if I'm attached to things, then if the circumstances are not there, I feel very disturbed. So that's how this Bhava Maha Dava Agni Nirvapanam. And we become relieved from the miseries of material existence by absorption in Krishna. Yeah, any questions? The next point I'll go forward towards the Chandrika Vitaranam, which is an important point. But before that, you had a question? I'll come to you. Answered already?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Yes, I'll come to you.
Who is first?
Yeah.
Who is first? I was
Maybe you can just speak, I'll repeat.
I was just thinking that on the Nectar of Devotion, chapter I believe 24, Srila Prabhupada says very interestingly about Mahadabhagini Bhagavan. He used the Sanskrit word.
Hmm.
He says when a disciple feels experience separation from the spiritual master, their tears will extinguish his material existence. That's called Bhava Mahadabhagini. I was contemplating about it many times. Now, what illumination you gave today, this chanting, transit to us from Chaitutarpana Marjanam to Bhava Mahadabhagini. And I was thinking, is that an experience or is it intellectualizing, conceptualizing that I have achieved that or actually?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we say that by chanting Chitadarpana Marjanam, we move to Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. So is it intellectualizing or conceptualizing, or is it actually experiencing? Both aspects are there in it. You know, generally, we need to be guided by the intelligence. So even intellectually understanding that I am not the body, I am the soul, that also gives us some motivation to tolerate bodily sufferings. But that alone is not enough. So we need to experience. So experience doesn't necessarily mean I get some mystical vision by which I see I'm a soul. But experience can also mean that when we connect with Krishna, when we remember Krishna, when we feel some higher fulfillment in the remembrance of Krishna, that itself can be an indicator for us that there is a higher reality, that I can get relief in that higher reality. And when I get relief in that higher reality, then whatever is the lower reality, I can tolerate it. So I'll give an example for this. Let's say there is a small baby. You know, when a baby is newborn, she doesn't even know that there is my mother and my mother loves me. She's just born crying, and then she sees she's put on the mother's breast and she drinks milk. But for her, initially she's not aware of anything. But slowly as she moves on, she starts becoming aware, oh, this is not just some milk coming from somewhere. There's a person who loves me. That person is giving me milk. That all that awareness grows gradually. And then say, it's a cold night and the baby is shivering. And the mother sees that, and the mother puts a blanket on the baby. Now, when the baby is very small, she will not understand anything. Oh, I was trembling and now I'm feeling comfortable. That's all she will sense. But as she grows up and she understands that my mother loves me, then even if she's, her eyes are closed, even if she's asleep, still, when she feels the warmth of the blanket, she knows, oh, my mother must have put the blanket on me. Now, at this stage, the eyes are not open. So she has not seen the mother. But just from the warmth of and the comfort of the blanket, she understands the background. Okay, this is my mother's love for me. And that mother's love is being expressed with the blanket being put on my body. So similarly, initially when we start practicing bhakti, you know, we just come to a temple or we come to kirtan and dance, and it just feels good. Now why it feels good, what is the source of that good feeling, we don't know anything. It's like a baby just putting the mouth at the mother's breast and getting some nice milk. Oh, this is good. But it doesn't know anything. Why? From where? What is this good? Who is giving me this good? Why is this good feeling coming? We don't know anything. But as we grow spiritually, then whenever we absorb ourselves in Krishna, whether it is in studying Shastra, whether it is worshipping the deity or chanting the holy names or doing kirtan, now we experience some uplifting feeling. We experience some purifying, solace-giving, strengthening feeling. And as we grow spiritually, then we connect that experience with Krishna's love. So that experience of relief we get when we absorb ourselves in Krishna. But to connect that with Krishna's love, yes. It's like the blanket. The baby at one particular time will connect. Oh, this blanket's warmth and comfort, that is an expression of my mother's love for me. Similarly for us, at our sadhaka stage, now our spiritual eyes are not yet open, so we can't see Krishna. But the comfort and relief that we experience in the remembrance of Krishna, that is, if we see with the eyes of knowledge, we understand this is an expression of Krishna's love for me. So that's why I said there is an experience. But to connect that experience with Krishna's love, we need knowledge. Without that, I will have the experience. I came to a temple. You know, I felt so nice. I felt so peaceful when I came to a temple. But then I just go back and go on with my life. If I don't have the knowledge, I think, okay, sometimes I go to some places, I feel good. So like that, I came to the temple and I felt good and I went away. So that's why we need to get experience, and the process of bhakti gives us experience. But from the experience, to make the connection, what does this experience mean? For that, we need knowledge also. So knowledge alone is not enough. We could say at one level, the experience is enough. But the problem is, if we don't understand the experience, we don't connect the experience with Krishna directly, then we will not follow a process to get that experience again. So that's why both are required. We have to intellectually understand the nature of material world. At the same time, we have to also practice bhakti, which gives us experience of higher reality. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, Mataji.
I have a question.
Yes, Mataji.
You talk about the mind and you talk about the intelligence.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
What is intuition?
Yeah, right. So what is intuition? Actually, usually, as I said, we talk about the mind in negative terms. The mind is short-term, impulsive, and the intelligence is long-term thoughtful. But Krishna also talks about the mind, that it can be the friend and it can be the enemy. So sometimes, we may also get some what people call as hunches from within. That is my hunch. And I shall do like this. So, and quite often we do that and it turns out to be right. So, there's a voice can speak from within. So, it's not that whatever the voice speaks from within, it's always bad. So, the intuition refers to the inner voice coming, which sometimes can tell us good also. So, this can be at multiple levels. At one level, at the highest level, you could say it is Krishna speaking as the super soul. Krishna also guides us. At another level, it can be our conscience speaking. Conscience is basically our sense of right and wrong. Now, the conscience is not always right about what is right. Because sometimes our conscience may also be culturally conditioned. So, that's why we have to be careful whether the conscience agrees with Shastra or not. But conscience can also be a source of telling us, okay, you should do this, you should not do this. And then there is the sattvic intelligence also. So that means if we are in goodness, then suddenly some idea comes, hey, this is what I should be doing. So ultimately we can say, mattaha smritir gyanam apohanam cha. Ultimately everything comes from Krishna. But there are stages within it also through which it comes. So some of it can be, if we have habitually heard about something. Say, since our childhood, we have been told, you know, this is right, this is wrong. We have heard in classes repeatedly that what is right, what is wrong. Then we are doing something, hey, you should not be doing this. Or you should be doing this. So that voice that comes along, that is the voice of the conscience, which is telling us. And then sometimes we have been thinking about a particular subject, but at a particular point, things fall into piece, like a jigsaw puzzle falling into piece. So that's also possible. So usually, our parameter for deciding whether we should do something or not is, if it matches with Guru Sadhu Shastra, we do it. And if it doesn't, then we at least have a pause button to check. Maybe consult somebody else or wait for some time and think a little bit more deeply. And sometimes we just get some very strong hunches which you feel, I should do it like this. And we may have to learn from experience. You know, we do it and sometimes it turns out, yeah, it was a good thing that I did. And sometimes it turns out that it is not all that good. It was a short-sighted decision. So there can be the intuition which directs us in the right direction, and that can be Krishna's voice, that can be the conscience, or that can be our own sattvic intelligence. But it is not easy to identify. That's why it is we need to look at ourselves over a period of time. Sometimes we may resist that particular voice, sometimes we may hear that voice. And over a period of time, we'll be able to discern which voice is right or which voice is not right. So it's generally speaking, Krishna wants to guide us. And to the extent when the decision is clear about right and wrong, and at that time we choose the right thing. There are certain situations when what is right and wrong, it's not so clear. But there are certain situations when what is right and wrong is clear. So if when what is right and wrong is clear, we choose the right thing at that time, then we are showing Krishna that I want to be guided. And then when things are not so clear, also Krishna will make it clear for us. But if we don't make the big decisions when they are clear what I should do, if we take the wrong choices at that time, then Krishna says, okay, you don't want guidance, then I will not give guidance. Then our intuitions may not be so prudent. Does it answer your question? Thank you. I think, can we move ahead?
Okay.
We'll talk a little later. We'll have the last sessions for question answer also. So let's move on to now Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. So Cheto Darpan Marjanam Bhavamaha Davagni Vitnam Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. So Kairava is a lotus, but it is a special kind of lotus. One is sometimes it is usually thought of as a white lotus, but more than the color, it is a lotus that blossoms in moonlight. Most Yeah,
sorry. Lily
flower.
Yeah. White.
Okay, white lily flower. Okay, fine. So, the this is a flower which blossoms in moonlight. Now, normally, we talk about flowers, say like lotuses which blossom in the sunlight. But this is a flower that blossoms in moonlight. Now, the significance here is that Chandrika is the Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. So Chandrika Vitaranam means, so Chandra is the moon. Chandrika, it is feminine, usually it refers to the moon rays or moonlight. Vitaranam is spreading. So the holy name, the chanting of the holy name, spreads the moonlight. And what does that mean? It spreads the moonlight and it causes this flower to blossom. So this flower will not blossom as long as the moonlight doesn't come. And it's not that the moon has to be there, moon is somewhere in the sky, light is not very bright. The moonlight has to come in contact with the flower. When it comes in contact with the flower, then the moon blossoms. Then the flower blossoms. So now the holy name, so Krishna is like the moon over here. Krishna is there in our heart, Krishna is there in the spiritual world, but we don't perceive him. Krishna is there in our consciousness, in our heart, but we are not conscious of him. The holy name is the means by which we become conscious of Krishna. See, if the moon is there in the sky, but somehow, say if there's a roof in between or whatever, the moonlight is not coming to the flower, then the flower will not blossom. So, like that, Krishna is there in our heart, and we are the soul is there next to it, but because the two are not coming in contact, so the blossoming of the flower is not taking place. But the holy name is what brings the soul in contact with Krishna, and that's how the soul's consciousness blossoms. And the fully blossomed consciousness is the Krishna consciousness. So Shreya refers to long-term good. Now, Prabhupada would often contrast Shreyas with Prayas. Prayas is short term and Shreyas is long term. So this blossoming of consciousness leads to the long term good of the soul, our long term good. Now, what exactly do we mean by blossoming of consciousness? Our consciousness is our fundamental energy. Our consciousness is our fundamental energy. Whatever we do it based on how we direct our consciousness. If I study and I do well in my exams, if I'm a doctor, if I'm an engineer, if I'm a housewife, whatever I'm doing in my life, I'm doing it based on my consciousness. So whatever we do, the fundamental energy for that is our consciousness. Now, our consciousness, it is restricted or expanded based on our attachments. So, for example, if I'm attached to something, If I'm attached to something, then I experience emotions only in relationship with that attached, that object of my attachment. And I don't experience emotions elsewhere. So for example, Dhritarashtra was attached to Duryodhana. And because of his attachment to Duryodhana, he could not tolerate even the slightest distress of Duryodhana. And so his consciousness, because of his attachment to Duryodhana, he was very focused on his emotions in relationship with Duryodhana. But that very attachment made him completely desensitized to what, say, the Pandavas were going through. Now the Pandavas were his own nephews, and because they did not have a father, so they were supposed to be like his own sons also. But you know, he had the play a gambling match, and he had all their wealth taken away, he had their wife dishonored, he had them exiled, and throughout it all, he did not feel any pain. He did not feel the pain of the Pandavas at all. He felt only the elation, oh, Duryodhana has won, and Duryodhana has got so much. So what has happened? When we are attached, our scope of emotions becomes very limited. We experience emotions with that particular object of attachment, but we don't experience emotions with respect to other things. See, if a person is an alcoholic, then that person experiences emotions only in relation with alcohol. I just have to have this alcohol. Now, for getting that alcohol, they may sometimes abuse people, they may steal money, they may do physical violence. And all the pain that they are causing, that attachment desensitizes them to everything else. Desensitizes them to everything else. Or say, for example, when people become sexually violent, then they cannot experience any emotion from the other person's perspective. They objectify the other person, and then all that they're seeing is, okay, I want to enjoy. But what the other person is going through, they just can't experience anything. So when our attachments constrict the scope of our consciousness. So based on the attachments that we have, we can experience emotions only with respect to certain things, and we can't experience any emotion apart from that. So when we say the blossoming of consciousness, that means what we experience emotions in relationship with, that expands. And as it expands more and more, Krishna is the source of everything. So when we are able to experience emotions in relationship with Krishna, that time we are actually having Krishna consciousness. So if I come to a temple and there are deities in the temple, but there are often people, you know, sometimes say the Janmashtami, nowadays it happens especially in India, and always it used to happen, not just nowadays. Say at that time politicians, they often come to the temple. But when they come to the temple, they also come with their photographers. You know, they want photographs to come. See, on Janmashtami day, I came to a temple. So they have come to the temple not to take darshan, but to give darshan. They want the world to see, oh, I am so pious, I have come to the temple. So what has happened? Although they have come to the temple, they are not experiencing emotions in relationship with the deities. They are experiencing emotions only in relationship with how much people are observing me, how many people are admiring me for the piety that I am showing over here. So our attachments, they shape the scope of our emotions. And when our attachment is to Krishna, we experience emotions in relationship with Krishna. So what the holy name does is, because it brings us in contact with Krishna, it helps us to experience emotions in relationship with Krishna. And normally, in our sadhaka stage, Hare Krishna. Am I audible behind? Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yeah. In the sadhaka stage, we experience emotions, but not so much in relationship with Krishna. Yes, there is some emotion, some aspect, some manifestation of Krishna with which we can connect with and we feel emotions. But other places, we don't feel much emotions. But as we expose ourselves to Krishna more and more through the practice of bhakti, then our consciousness starts getting more and more connected with Krishna, more and more attached to Krishna. And then as it becomes attached to Krishna, then we start experiencing more and more emotions in relationship with Him. And when we talk about emotions in relationship with Krishna, it is not just, you know, I come in front of the temple and I see the deities. Oh, the deities are beautiful. I feel very nice. Yes, we feel uplifted when we take darshan of the deities. That is one emotion. But there can be emotions in various ways. Now, if, say, we are going out for book distribution and a lot of people get Krishna's mercy in the form of books, at that time we feel emotions. Yes, you know, I was able to do some nice service for Krishna. That is also an emotion in relationship with Krishna. So if we are contributing to building a temple, and then the temple comes up beautifully, and we feel joy at that time. Ah, such a wonderful temple has come for Krishna. That is also an emotion relationship with Krishna. So there can be various emotions in relationship with Krishna, but when we start becoming emotionally connected with Krishna, then we are actually, our consciousness is expanding. Srila Prabhupada in one lecture says, how do we know that you are Krishna conscious? So there are many different answers he gives at different times, but in this lecture I found it very striking. He said, if you come into the temple and you take darshan of the deities and you feel that Krishna is asking you, what are you doing for me? If you feel like that, then you are Krishna conscious. It's an amazingly pragmatic definition of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada is not saying, oh, you chant 64 rounds, you are chanting Radhe Radhe Sham Sham. All that is also Krishna consciousness. But for us, those levels are not so easily achievable. But when we feel that I am a servant of Krishna and I should be doing something for Krishna. So when we feel that Krishna is asking me, what are you doing for me? You are Krishna conscious. So then we are seeing our life as meant for His service. And we try to serve Him. So what chanting does is, it makes us emotionally sensitized to Krishna. When we chant nicely, we can become emotionally sensitized to Krishna. That means it is when we study Shastra, when we take darshan of the deities, when we do services, we become more aware. Yes, this is actually Krishna and I am serving Krishna. And as this process becomes more and more expanded, we see this at a very high level in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. At any contact with Krishna, you just hear the holy name and he would go into ecstasy. Tears would come from his eyes and his limbs would tremble. That will happen because that contact with Krishna is happening much, much stronger for him. And thus, he moves onwards. So thus, he is exhibiting this expanded consciousness in a far greater degree. But that expanded consciousness is possible for all of us also. And the chanting does that. It expands our consciousness from whatever scope it is in right now towards expanded consciousness where we experience more and more emotions in relationship with Krishna. Now, there are two broad approaches to seeing the expansion of consciousness in relationship with Krishna. One is that, you know, we just consider all worldly emotions as material. And we say, I want to experience emotions in relationship with Krishna. So no material emotions, I want to experience only spiritual emotions. That's one way of looking at it, where we see the material and spiritual in competition with each other. But another way of looking at it is that ultimately, when we want to experience emotions in relationship with Krishna, it's a growth in selflessness. It's a growth in selflessness. And actually, every relationship that we have, every relationship to some extent forces us to develop some degree of selflessness. Any relationship that I form, then if I have to sustain the relationship, I cannot always do what I would like to do. I have to do something which the other person wants to do. And then that brings a certain level of selflessness within us. Now, of course, it may be that, you know, that person is also doing something for me and I am doing something for that person. So then we could say there is selfishness in that. But still, that is more than just self-centeredness. So we can see, in one sense, through every relationship that we have, there is an opportunity to grow in selflessness. Every relationship, whenever we act in a committed way in that relationship, we grow in selflessness through that relationship. And as we grow further and further, we move towards Krishna. And we attain that highest selflessness in our relationship with Krishna. So, the Shreya Kairava Chandra, Shreya means long-term good. That long-term good comes by our connection with Krishna. And so rather than seeing our relationship, material and spiritual, as competitors, sometimes they can be competitors, but at other times, we can see them as a progression. See, every relationship forces me to come out of myself and to do something which I may not like to do. Now, if our relationships are with other people who are also spiritual, our family members are spiritual, our friends are spiritual, then sometimes doing something which they want us to do also puts us, makes us do something spiritual which we might otherwise have not done. So, that way, we can move forward in our relationship with Krishna. I'll talk more about this in a later verse when we talk about detachment, attachment and commitment. Three different concepts are there, which I'll be talking in a later verse. But at this stage, we grow, as we chant more and more, we become more and more emotionally sensitized with various manifestations of Krishna. And that's how the lotus, the flower, it blossoms. Any comments or questions? Yes. Hare Krishna.
Talking about taking darshan of Krishna and selflessness, right? And you're so right. I go to the temple and I'm still in the mental platform and thinking, what can I get out of this?
Yeah.
And so what would be the difference between a rascal like me and going to the temple and taking darshan? What is going through the devotee, the devotee's mind when he goes and takes darshan, with the deity, in comparison to me. I'm thinking selfishly, you know. I'm here to surrender 100%. I'm here to see my peers, like stuff like that. What's the right way of going to temple? Something that we do.
When we go into the temple, we may not always go in the mood of selfless service. So what can we do? See, firstly, selfless is not less for the self. Now, when I think I have to be selfless, I think I will lose this, I will lose that, I will lose that. It's not necessarily like that. When we become selfless, actually, the self connects deeper with Krishna and there is more for the self. It is not less for the self. It is the material conception. And if when I become selfless, say if I have some money and I give it in charity, then I lose that money. So it becomes self, to be selfless in the material conception means to be less, to have less for the self. But it is not like that in the spiritual conception. The more our, the less our consciousness is in ourselves, the more our consciousness is available for absorption in Krishna. So that idea of selflessness as sort of in some way being deficient for ourselves, that is wrong. So now, at our stage, we don't have this realization. So rather than thinking of, so if we consider, say, there is a circle of what interests me, and there's a circle of bhakti. So we find the intersection of the two. That means, if I like to do kirtans, I like to play mridanga, I like to dance in kirtans, I like to, say, decorate something, that is my interest. And that is also something which I can do in bhakti. So, that place where what interests us and what is in the scope of bhakti, the intersection point is where we will be able to stay steadily situated. Now, of course, there will be times when for the sake of service, we will have to do things which may not interest us. Because that is what is the need of the hour. No, I don't like this so much, but that's what I've been told to do, I'll do it. But in terms, if you want to have longevity in our bhakti, if you want to do bhakti for life, then we have to find this intersection of what is my interest and what is in the scope of bhakti. In fact, the whole principle of Varnashram is that. Varnashram, the principle is that a Brahmana likes to do intellectual work. So intellectual work is in the circle of interest of the Brahmana. And in bhakti also there is study of scripture is intellectual. So then the Brahmanas are told, study, you would like to study anyway, but study books related with Krishna and teach Krishna's message. So that's Varnashram means we situate ourselves in that circle of, in that section of intersection between our interests and bhakti. So at our stage, when we go to the temple, you know, we cannot expect artificially to be completely selfless. It is not practically possible. So what we need to do is, first we have to become devotees. Then we can become pure devotees. If I think suddenly I'll jump to pure devotion, it's just not going to work. Yes, we have to have the aspiration for pure devotion. But at a practical level, we have to connect with Krishna in some way or the other. And then, as I connect with Krishna, and I stabilize that connection with Krishna, then there will be selflessness that will come in the relationship. So first, we have a relationship. And whatever way it works out, simply some person comes to the temple, and that person likes to maybe make flower garlands. Okay, they like, that's what they like, and that's what they do for Krishna. And gradually the relationship with Krishna develops through that. So we don't necessarily have to worry too much in the initial stages. The important thing is to connect with Krishna on a steady basis. And as we are steadily connected, then gradually the selflessness within that service will become more and more. So when advanced devotees, they come to a temple, their mood is more of service. Okay, you know, what service can I do over here? And then we're saying, okay, what are the ways in which services are happening in this temple? What all is happening and how can I assist? So their focus will be more and more on Krishna. That is something which will come gradually. So initially we need to focus on making our connection with Krishna steady. And that steadiness also requires some level of selflessness. That means instead of I may feel like going to some movie or going to some sports match or whatever, but I come to a temple instead. That itself is, I am giving up my self-centered pleasures for coming to Krishna. So gradually, as we move forward, by being situated in that position of what interests us and what is in the scope of bhakti, we will solidify our connection with Krishna. So initially, we may not know what it is also. So we just do what we are told to do, but we keep observing ourselves. Okay, this is what I really like to do. This is what I can do well also. And then over a period of years, it will be revealed to us what service we should be doing. But at this stage, we can focus primarily on making our connection with Krishna steady. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, ma'am. Prabhupada said in the Bhagavad Gita, Jiva Sukhanya Singh, pleasure seeking by nature. So what I understand, I want you to correct me, that Chetadarpana Marjanam and Om Adavagni Prabhupada, it appears like cessation of the
misery. Misery, correct. Yeah.
But that state is not stable, because so until he comes to this, at least.
Yes.
Is that proper?
Yeah. So, is cessation of misery not stable unless the soul comes to experience Krishna? Yeah, that is our understanding, that the soul needs pleasure somewhere or the other. So if the soul does not get spiritual pleasure, then even if one somehow becomes distanced from material pleasure, search for pleasure will push one back again over there.
Yes.
That's why it's a frustration is not the qualification for devotion. Just because I'm frustrated in material life, that does not mean make me qualified for spiritual, devotional life. Frustration can become a spur. You know, when I'm frustrated in material life, I start inquiring, what is higher? But then, there has to be some positive attraction to Krishna that has to develop. And that happens by the mercy of devotees, by the mercy of the spiritual master. So, just if I'm frustrated in material life and that's why I come to spiritual life, then, you know, it is not that spiritual life is free from frustration. In spiritual life also there will be frustration. Then I'll go back to material life again because of that. So we need some motive higher than just the avoidance of trouble. So because of trouble in my material life, I come to spiritual life. And because of trouble in spiritual life, I go back to material life. No, we have to have some higher conviction, higher attraction, and then we'll be able to move on steadily. So yes, the first two stages talk about the rejection of the freedom from material consciousness. And now it talks about spiritual consciousness.
I have one more.
Yeah. Any other questions? Anyone else? Okay.
The Rupa Goswami first verse, Chetasya Prangana Sangini Param Vijayate Sarva Indriyanam. And then while you are explaining this, I was comparing that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur gave a comment on that. When the soul experiencing in ecstasy, his ecstasy is captured by intelligence, pure intelligence. That time, the mind will try to intervene, where the intelligence will say, shut down your karma factory. That's how he explained. And you don't need anymore. Then the mind will keep bothering, and then the intelligence says, he's connected with Anantam, Sukham. You do not need this temporary. That time, actually, the karma gyan disappeared or started disappearing. Mm. That was the Kailava Chandrika.
Yeah. So, is it that when we start practicing bhakti and when we come to the level of contact with Krishna, Sri Akarav Chandragavitarana, the intelligence is what the way we experience Krishna, and the mind interferes, but then the intelligence says no to the mind. Yeah, that's true. See, in the Bhagavata also it is said, buddhi grahya matindriyam. So that actually buddhi grahya, it's experienced through buddhi. Atindriyam, that which is beyond the senses. So what this means is that if we consider this is the physical level, this is the mental level, this is the intellectual level, this is, or rather not levels you could say, this is the senses, this is the mind, this is the intelligence, this is the soul, this is the super soul. We consider five like this. Now, like earlier I said, when there is a pure devotee, the soul is connected with the super soul directly by priti, by affection. The soul is connected with the super soul because of affection. Now in our case, here there are the senses, you can say they, you know, there are sense objects. So we are dragged downwards from the senses to the sense objects. And then the mind also gets attracted to sense objects and the intelligence also gets pulled down. So when we start practicing bhakti and we start experiencing Krishna, now at the very advanced stage, we are experiencing Krishna constantly. At the sadhaka stage, as we become purified, we experience Krishna more and more, but it is not that we are experiencing Krishna constantly. There is intermittent experiences. So at that time, so this connection, so for the sadhaka, for the siddha, there is a direct connection between the soul and the super soul. But for us, the connection is like this. The connection is through the intelligence we connect with Krishna. That means through the intelligence, I commit myself. This is what I am going to do. So that's what it means. Because our consciousness doesn't focus on Krishna steadily. So it is only through the intelligence that we are able to focus the consciousness. And that's why I said through the intelligence we experience Krishna. It is the soul only who is experiencing Krishna, but it is through the intelligence. So the intelligence becomes the channel by which the soul connects with Krishna. Buddhi grahya matindriyam. And then the mind is pulling down. So now, I'll just use the English word, then I'll talk about Sanskrit concepts a little bit. See, there is conviction and there is realization. Conviction is of the intelligence. You know, I study the philosophy, I analyze, and I'm convinced, you know, okay, these worldly things, they don't give happiness. So I'm intellectually convinced, but that does not mean that the mind has accepted it. The mind is still going to propose. So it's like a simple example. You know, say if you go out on the roads, there are billboards. Oh, buy this, buy this, buy this. Or we are on the TV, there are commercials. You know, buy this, buy this. So say, now we become convinced that, okay, I'm not going to say they're advertising a new car. I decide I'm not going to buy a new car. Now, just because I have decided not to buy a new car, that does not mean the advertisers are going to stop advertising the car. Isn't it? Even if I decide I'm not going to buy, the advertisers are going to stop, continue advertising. So it's like that. The mind is like Maya's internal advertising agent. The mind is Maya's internal advertising agent. So even when, say with my intelligence, I am convinced. No, I'm not going to do this. But even when I'm convinced that to not buy something, the mind is not going to stop promoting it. The mind is not going to stop advertising it. So that means that with the intelligence, I know I don't want to do this. I've decided not to do it. But still the mind keeps proposing. Still the mind keeps proposing. Come on, do it, do it, do it. So the conviction is what enables us to say no to the mind. But as we keep practicing bhakti more and more, then the mind itself stops proposing. So when the mind itself stops proposing, actually at one level that is the realization. So then the mind itself doesn't say. Say for example, some of us might have been eating meat before we came to bhakti. Now if we see somebody eating, say we are traveling in a plane and we see somebody else eating meat. Now, almost no devotee is actually attracted to eat meat. Prasadam is literally a higher taste. So what has happened? The mind has stopped proposing itself. So actually when that happens, so when the mind stops proposing, then bhakti becomes joyful. As long as the mind keeps proposing, come on, do this, we have to keep saying no to it. And that's why the process of bhakti may not be that joyful. There is joyfulness when we connect with Krishna, but whenever the mind starts proposing, and do this, and we think, maybe no, yes, no, maybe later, okay. Just thinking, so many things. So we are distracted from Krishna at that time. But gradually, when the mind itself says, when the mind itself understands, there's no pleasure over here. And the mind stops proposing. So then, what happens is, bhakti becomes very joyful because there is no distraction coming from within itself. That's why there is mind control and there is mind conversion. No, we have to control the mind as we are practicing bhakti. And that requires the intelligence. But by the steady practice of bhakti, the mind itself gets converted. Converted means that the mind itself eventually starts becoming attracted to Krishna. Or doesn't get so attracted to worldly things. And that is the stage when the mind becomes a friend. So that takes a long time. That's why it is primarily right now, we have to connect with Krishna through the intelligence and we experience Krishna primarily through the intelligence. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yeah, please. Yes, Prabhuji.
Different ways that we experience emotional exchanges with Krishna and the sadhaka platform. Well, we're pleasing him, then we experience that bliss. Other ways?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
I'd say, you know, that the ways that we emotionally exchange with Krishna and the sadhaka platform, when we please him, I use the example, we go out and distribute books and then we feel so satisfied because Krishna is pleased. And that becomes obvious. There's a reciprocal exchange in an emotion, spiritually emotional platform. Are there other spiritual emotions on the sadhaka platform?
I thought the understanding is that as a sadhaka, we are being guided by pure intelligence. So the emotion is captured by intelligence.
Okay, I'll just take that point also. So, at the sadhaka stage, what are the emotions that we can experience in relationship with Krishna? Is it when Krishna is pleased, we feel satisfied? But apart from that also, there are other emotions? Yes, it is not that devotees don't have their own desires. Now, a devotee can also have a desire to serve Krishna. Like Srila Prabhupada said that my spiritual master told me to preach in the West. Now, that I have done. Now, I want to preach in India. Now, he focused a large part of his later life on India. Now, that is not, is we cannot, it's not that his, it is his own desire, means it is a non-devotional desire. It's a devotional desire only, pure desire, but it's his own desire. So, similarly, now, our desires may not be that pure, but even we can have some desire to please Krishna, to serve Krishna in a particular way. And even if there is some amount of maybe selfishness or whatever there in it, but still it's a desire to serve Krishna. And that is laudable. So, in the Bhakti Rasama Sindhu, there is the concept of Uddipan. Uddipan. Uddipan is, in English, spiritual stimuli. Spiritual stimulus. So all of us, we will have our own Uddipan. So for example, like for me, when I go and take darshan, unless I recite some verse, I just don't experience any connection with Krishna. So I told one class, so when we recite verses, we can recite the verse and we can think about the qualities of Krishna that I described in the verse, and then we can meditate on how that same Krishna is over here, and then we can connect with Krishna. And then after that, one devotee, after a couple of days, he came and told me. He said, since you told me that, I'm trying that. And when I go in front of Krishna and I try to recite a verse, just memorizing that verse causes so much tension that whatever bhakti I have goes away in that. So, I realized that verses are a uddipan for me. But they are not a uddipan for that devotee. So we have to find out what will act as a spiritual stimuli for us. So for somebody else, it might just go in front of the deities and they sing some kirtan, just some simple Hare Krishna dhun they sing, and that's what connects them with Krishna. For somebody else, it might just be they behold the beautiful dress of Krishna and that's what they focus on. Now, so for us, we will have, for all of us, we will have our uddipans. And as we move forward in our bhakti, we find out, this is what really connects me with Krishna. Maybe we recite some Vaishnava song, or not just some Vaishnava song. Sometimes even one line of a Vaishnava song can resonate so much with us. Or one line of one verse can resonate with us. So whatever are our uddipan, they are for us the channels that connect us emotionally with Krishna. So now all of us, we have that experience of, we could say, sensual stimuli. You know, say we all have certain sensual stimuli that agitate us much more than others. You know, maybe we may have weakness for a particular food or a particular activity, whatever it is. Now others may not have that. So if that is a sensual stimuli which agitates me emotionally, then I have to be cautious in avoiding that stimuli or whatever I can do to minimize my exposure to that. So just as we customize our practice of bhakti to resist the sensual stimuli to which we are particularly vulnerable. Similarly, we need to customize our practice of bhakti so that we can maximize our exposure to the spiritual stimuli that actually connect us with Krishna. So here we minimize the connection, but here in sensual stimuli we minimize the connection. In spiritual stimuli we maximize the connection. So now we see it as Krishna giving his mercy to us through that stimuli. So why is it that, you know, this particular verse, it just fills me with so much realization, so much emotion, so much illumines me with so much wisdom. All right, so much this line or this particular tune, whatever it is, we see it's Krishna's mercy manifesting. So when we do some service for Krishna, that time Krishna is pleased, we feel emotions. That's definitely true. But there are also certain stimuli which connect us emotionally with Krishna. And if we can note that and have those stimuli available for us on a ready basis, then we can fight off our mind much more effectively. It becomes a weapon for fighting off the mind. So then whatever we experience emotions in relationship with Krishna, we see that as Krishna mercifully manifesting himself through that for us. So we do have some things. Now, is it that Krishna is pleased with us? Well, quite often, you know, we have not done anything to please Krishna. Yes, we hear some verse or we say some darshan, we hear some Hare Krishna Mahamantra tune, and we just feel something. So we feel some emotional contact with Krishna. So it is more like Krishna is pleased with us in the sense that Krishna is pleased to give us his mercy. Even if I have not done anything, Krishna is giving his mercy through that particular thing for me. And we accept that and we cherish that. Does that address your question?
Generally speaking, it has to do with pleasing Krishna rather than pleasing ourselves. That's when the emotions awaken.
Yeah, certainly it is more about pleasing Krishna than pleasing ourselves. I mean, it is not that, you know, pleasing Krishna always has to come at the expense of displeasing ourselves. It's like if somebody makes a joke in a class, and then instead of laughing, I start thinking, am I laughing for my pleasure or Krishna's pleasure? That would become hyper-analytical. So usually, you know, there is a big section where there's an intersection of the two. I think the real problem comes when something is essential for Krishna's service and we refuse to do it because I don't like it. So that is when the problem will come up. But at least I am not at such an advanced level where, you know, I can only work for Krishna's pleasure. So at least all of us have our natures, and the whole principle of Varnashram in my understanding is to help us serve according to our nature. And when we say what is our nature, that simply means, no, doing that is natural for me. The natural, I can say also, it means it's pleasing to me. for a Brahmana to study Shastra, study anything which is intellectually stimulating, that is pleasing. But then the austerity is to do that for Krishna's, to do that for promoting Krishna's cause. So definitely there will be situations when we may have to do things which we don't like to do. But in terms of longevity, we do need to have something which is according to our nature. Means we could say that it is, we find it pleasing. But it is not that we are doing it only because it is pleasing for me. It is in the intersection of serving Krishna and it is also in the of what we like to do. I think there is that pastime of Srila Prabhupada which comes in the Lilamrit, where one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada is in London, and all the devotees, London was like the Western headquarters, in the European headquarters at that time, and the devotees from different parts of the world, different parts of Europe have come, and they are reporting to Prabhupada, you know, this is how preaching is going here, this is how preaching is going on here. And there is this devotee who says, everybody has something to do for Srila Prabhupada. I don't have anything to do. So he goes and asks Srila Prabhupada, so Prabhupada, what can I do for you? So then Prabhupada asks, what do you want to do for Krishna? He says, no Prabhupada, whatever you want, you tell me, I'll do it. No Prabhupada, what do you want to do for Krishna? So he's never thought of this. He says, is this a test? Prabhupada is testing it. So whatever you want, I'll do, Prabhupada. No, the Prabhupada says, understand our philosophy. He says, find out what you want to do and do it for Krishna. So he starts thinking what to do. He says, Prabhupada, I'll have to think about it. And then he comes back after a few days and he tells Prabhupada, you know, I always had this desire to make some things with some artistic things with my hands. So I was thinking I'll make these mrudangas with artificial material which is available in the West, because we get mrudangas from India, they break very easily. So I'll make them with unbreakable material, they'll be easily available and they will stay here. We can make them easily. So then Prabhupada says, yes, Prabhupada, your Western godbrothers are very passionate. So he says, make them in such a way that even if they throw the mrudangas down, they will not break. Does anyone know? Who is it?
Ishantru.
He lives here. Ishantru, last year I met him actually. That is also one way of, you know, we find out what we want to do and we do it for Krishna. So, and in the long run, my understanding is that that's what is sustainable. Because if we are inspired to do something, we will do it even when nobody is pushing us to do it. Because if there is something which we are not really very inspired to do, then there always has to be someone to push us. Are you doing it? Are you doing it? Are you doing it? And it's good to be accountable to someone. But to make our bhakti dependent on someone else in terms of they having to prod us all the time, that will not make our bhakti very sustainable. So if we have that vision or inspiration where we want to do something for Krishna and we take the blessings of senior devotees. Now, of course, this should not be like a license for whimsicality. You know, I want to do this, I want to do this. The nature of the mind is that the mind will say, whatever you are doing right now, that is not your nature. That's how the mind will want to take us away from taking up any responsibility in Krishna's service. So often what is our nature also takes some amount of time to discover. So till then we just have to follow the seniors and learn and do whatever service we are doing. But over a period of time that will be revealed to us about how we can sustain ourselves. Does it address your question? Okay. So yes, one last question. I'll come back to you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that becomes a problem, as I said. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I feel that, especially in any project, in the initial stages, the devotees have to have a lot of sacrificing spirit. And as the project grows and there are more devotees, then devotees can also be engaged according to their natures. But if everybody starts thinking, this is my nature, this is my nature, this is my nature, and then the project will not grow. So there's always that that balance that has to be done between the individual growth and the institutional growth. So the institutional growth requires some things, but the individual also has to grow in bhakti. So both, at some places they can go in parallel, sometimes they may go in opposite directions. So then, at least in a community for it to grow, there have to be some individuals who are very inspired to do what it takes for the community to grow. And those who are always trying to say that this is not my nature, this is not my nature, then they will themselves not grow in spiritual life. So definitely, our nature should not become our excuse for not doing service. And if something is really required, then definitely Krishna will be pleased if we go against our nature and do that service. So from the individual's perspective, see, bhakti is, there is always this mood of cooperation. So the individual should think, you know, I'll do whatever I'm told to do. But the manager should think, okay, if this person has this nature, then I'll try to engage them in this nature. And that way, there'll be cooperation. Just like we talk about the, say, the elderly. No, the Shastra tells from the elderly point of view, those who are elderly, they should renounce home, they should go to the forest, and they should focus on spirituality. That's from the individual perspective. But from the society's perspective, it is said that the Kshatriya's responsibility is to protect five categories of people, and one of them is the elderly. The Kshatriya should not think when people become elderly, you know, you go to the forest and you take care of yourself. No, the management should think, no, it is our responsibility. No, these are people who have lived throughout, they have served throughout, it is our responsibility to take care of them. So there has to be that cooperative spirit from both sides. So the individuals are ready to be selfless and do what is required for the community. And as the community leaders also are seeing, okay, for this person, if this is the nature, let us see how we can engage them in that nature. You know, that cooperative spirit is there, then both the individual and the community and the institution both can grow. Okay. Yes, last question and we'll stop. We'll take a break.
You were talking about intelligence. So like in Kunti's prayer, you talked about even the great saints and sages can't really, you know, grasp Krishna or understand how can a simple person like her. So it appears as though there's like a special kind of intelligence that can really grab, you know, gravity and the mind towards Krishna. It's okay. Like there are some people who are so intelligent,
yeah,
but
okay,
not connected.
So is it that there is some special kind of intelligence that enables us to move towards Krishna? Because there are sometimes people who are very intelligent materially, but they are not at all inclined towards Krishna. Yes, definitely. See, even material life, they talk about different kinds of intelligence. Sometimes they talk about seven types of intelligences. You know, spatial, linguistic intelligence, mathematical intelligence, logical intelligence, interpersonal intelligence, intrapersonal intelligence, like that they have different kinds of intelligences. So a person might be very good at mathematical intelligence, but that person's language skills may be very poor. Just that there can be a variety of intelligences even in the material field. So similarly, when we talk about spiritual intelligence, it primarily centers on differentiating between the temporary and the eternal. Between the short term and the long term, in terms of the temporary and the eternal. And that intelligence is not something that intellectuals naturally have. See, intellectual means they have information processing capacity. It may be in terms of memorizing things, speaking things, analyzing things. All this is information processing. And those who are intellectuals, that means those who have, we could say, one characteristic of a Brahmana, that intelligence, they may not necessarily have all the characteristics of a Brahmana. So if they have the information processing capacity, now that is simply a gift that some people get from their previous life. Just like some people may have good looks from their previous life. Some people may have a very healthy physique from their previous life. Like that, some people, because of some karma that they have, some good karma that they have done in previous life, they have that capacity for processing information very well. Now that information processing capacity can be powerfully used in Krishna service. But it is not automatic that it will be used in Krishna service. So Buddhi Maharani also says that some Janma Ishwara Shruta Shribhir Edhaman Mudhapaman Naivarhatya Vidatumai Tvamakinchana Gochar. Somebody has a lot of intelligence, they may not feel the need for Krishna. And thus they may not go towards Krishna. So it is not that intelligence of any kind is always a blessing in the process of bhakti. So usually the intelligence that we talk about, which is favorable for bhakti, is the intelligence that is based on Shastra. The intelligence that is in harmony with Shastra. So that intelligence is what will take us towards Krishna. And if we use our information processing abilities to strengthen our understanding of that scriptural knowledge, then that is the intelligence which will take us closer towards Krishna. So mere information processing capacity is not necessarily anukul to bhakti. Although it can be, it is not in itself. And sometimes even some people are atheists. You know, they can be brilliant in terms of memorizing things. They can be brilliant in terms of analyzing things. Some of the atheistic critiques of religion, they are insightful in their own way. They are analyzing religion and they are exposing religion. They are doing an intelligent job over there. But their intelligence is only in terms of skepticism and rejection. They are not moving forwards. So information processing capacity alone is not the kind of intelligence that takes us closer to Krishna. It is intelligence that is in harmony with scripture and intelligence that deepens our conviction about the knowledge that is given in scripture. That is what takes us closer towards Krishna. Does that answer your question? So thank you very much. So we'll have a break for around 15 minutes and we'll meet at around 3:50. Is that okay? Thank you. Can take a chair, Mother.
You need a break, then you please take some water, take some rest.
No, I'm fine. Can take a chair, Mother.
Ever since I found out your gummy, I wanted to write to you, but then I thought I shouldn't just write to choke up your email inbox.
No, not like that.
I'm very conscious because people like you are, you know, your every minute you can count it and
it won't speak like this. Nothing like that.
At least I wanted to offer some words of that. Because when we found out we were out of town, and then we found out you're coming.
Okay.
Then I spoke to my husband. I said, we have a short time to come back and then we have to go again. You know, like South Africa.
Okay.
So. It's very good time. Yeah. I was thinking, so I want to offer you some service because do something for you.
We are already doing so much for our mission. What you're doing is actually extraordinary.
So, I need your blessings. I have a speech prepared. I haven't prepared anything. And we are going to so many places. And we have been back. When you leave the house, everything is okay. Nothing functioning. So, but the company here is so. I'm going to get some books to distribute.
Okay.
Yeah, that leadership book I gave my husband, I found it on his nightstand, you know. And I read the whole thing, it was so nice. I mean, you know, I think you've written a couple of books that are.
Okay.
He Please take Prashant.
I'll take after.
So, I think the good thing, like, you know, was like play that. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I think you do it so beautifully because you bring up the questions that are occurring in the reader.
Yeah.
Just beautiful. Love. Just so nice. Thank you.
Okay.
I have intellectual question, but those are useless. I feel like forever my nature is like my high school year, I taught a class. You know, I like to study, and that's how my, you know, always that's been my inclination. But how, like, I totally surrendered when I got married. That because so many sannyasis who come to my house with the sound, so I totally like went into this mode where I will just do what's required of me and just go. So much growth of my husband. Yeah. Thank you so much. So, probably you take.
I'll take a little one.
So, I gave off like that. I just totally dedicated myself. You know, and then, you know, we have some of these children. And then the temple I was in had very few people. So, they need to.
So, you're not in Alachua all the time?
No. We got them. So, there were very few devotees and a lot of services. So, like, dress babies or make. I used to make all the garments every day. So, even Mukhya, she was traveling and she came and she said, Swami, why are you sitting here with the garments? You should be out preaching, you know, you have some indulgence. But that's what the temple needed, and that was my. I was a good devotee. What's needed is what I'm doing. My inclination. I always like repressed. You know how it means that word repression.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not able to satisfy. And then I started. The children started going. Okay, now I always read a little bit, but couldn't get, like, you know, into it. Like, I would like. So then I Radhika Ramana Prabhu from Oxford, he came to the house and I want to study with you, so what I want to do, study in their system. I know. So he said, why don't you enroll in the university, because that's what I will be teaching, because apart from that, there won't be so much time, individually.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I enrolled, started doing my master. I was so thriving. I got A+. Like, you know how it's like, it encourages you, like you feel some reciprocation. And also preaching was going on, because in every class there was this atheist professor who would mention Krishna in every class looking at me. He was like, what is the boy? We were discussing Durkheim and, you know, Nietzsche and all these things. And
okay.
He would bring in Krishna just because I was there.
Okay.
Include, because the graduate class only a few students. So, and I was distributing Krishna. Then my parents came to me. They're looking after me. I don't take care of them. I'm very interested in staying with them. So I'm taking care of my brother, my wife, my uncle, she's Australian. So in the beginning, it was fine because, you know, they didn't need so much
care.
But then soon they get really sick. So it took over my husband's life. Even I had to make a my younger daughter. My husband was taking care of me, putting in macaroni cheese, because I was gone all day, you know, with hospitals and dialysis. And here you don't, specifically in this town, it's hard to get some treatments.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about so much treatment. But what I'm coming to is, I am so happy. This nourishes me. What you're doing here, it's very nourishing my soul. I feel so happy. So, but I feel very unqualified in the sense that it's actually going to be
That's going to be bigger. So, closer, make it smaller.
Well, that's right. forgotten. I mean, it's not like it's a memory text.
It's an aspect of your life which you have become disconnected with for a long time now.
Yes, and that's constant.
But how are you situated now? Are your schedules still that tight, or now you can manage time for doing these things?
With all the traveling, not so much, but that's nourishing because I'm just helping, you know, talking. Yeah. It's very, very rewarding. I have no complaints. I'm like praying all the time to engage with them. So that might be happening. However, as we get older, we do everything ourselves. I put it in. I want to hide and put the garbage out, for instance, with my, I don't want my husband to know. I mean, menial things. I think as I get older, I have certain standards. It takes me longer to do it. I don't know, it sounds like a list of experiences, but it's not. But that's what I'm saying also.
Is there anything specific you feel like you want to do, or you know? Okay. See, I would.
I'm sorry.
No, I understand. No, no, not a burden. I understand. See, I would say there's two things mainly. In general, as we grow older in our spiritual life, we'll always become busier. And that is something which is unavoidable. So within that, the only way we will be able to study is if it becomes a necessary service for us. So that means that if you somehow can have more speaking engagements. Now you already have some, but if you could make it a little more, I don't know how, I'll just talk about a little, but if somewhere, say some forums where you can speak more. And I'm going to talk in that Trunadapi Sunechena, you know. Self-pity is not humility.
Yeah, so.
Not pity. I'm just going to talk about that.
Like
feeling
inadequate.
I understand.
I feel like, what,
no.
I'm just being a fake. You know? I'm standing talking lofty words.
That way, you know, all of us are to some extent fake. It is true. But, so no, basically you can, rather than thinking about fakeness or genuineness, you could focus on what inspires you. So, if you could somehow create some speaking engagements. Now, one thing is you could even have, you must have your own Facebook page, you know, you can just, or whatever. You know, you just, nowadays online also, you can just, you read some scripture and you speak something. So, you're a well-known person already. No, it doesn't need time. Just have a cell phone and you record it on that something, or you write something, whatever. If you start it, it will require some effort to start off. But when you start off, you can do it as, you know, what you could do at CJ. You will become a very good teacher.
Huh?
You'll become a very good teacher, I feel, because from whatever I interacted with you, you have a systematic intelligence, and it may not seem very okay. Let me put two things. The first thing is, if you're thinking in terms of qualification. No, you can also think in terms of, say, the same attitude of service with which you did so many menial services. That's what, because that was what was needed.
Yeah.
So similarly, now if a senior Vaishnava is telling you that, you know, this is what you have to do, you can see this with the same service attitude. Don't think of whether I am qualified or not.
Okay.
If a Vaishnava wants me to do it, then you can take it that way. This will, even if you can do some part, you know, maybe if you do 2-3 chapters of Bhagavad Gita or a few one book, NOI, or half a book or whatever, that will nourish you a lot. In our movement, I say the only way we can study Shastra systematically is through these courses.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if you're just going as a traveling preacher, you will get to speak, but you will have to speak on very basic topics.
Yes.
There are some basic introductory topics. If you want to go deep in Shastra, then it's a blessing that he has already asked. In fact, the second thing I was going to tell you was this only. Second thing I was going to tell you that, one is, whatever you are reading, if you just make it a habit to speak it or write it. Writing it may be difficult for you, but speak it. And even if nobody hears it, just put it online. If you make that as a habit, at the very least, if nothing else happens, it will become more internalized for you.
Yeah.
And if this is already...
I have all these questions.
Put it on a blog or something like that, or write it down. There are reasonably good writer also. Even if you decide write 100 words or something like that, 50 words. Even if nobody reads, somebody reads. At least you will be able to process it more in your mind. It will become more accessible for you, more relatable for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think daily doing something, I can send you some the non-devotional material. But the idea of daily writing, actually, I'll send you some book. I have a nice book.
Yeah, okay.
It's by the non-devotee, but it's for daily experience, very nice.
Okay,
all the best.
Thank you. Didn't get a break.
That's okay. Thank you very much. Fine.
Thank you.